everybody.
Morning.
If you've got a Bible, I'll be turning to 2 Samuel chapter 17. You heard announced earlier that Bible Bowl practice this afternoon at 5 will be over chapter 17 and 18. So this morning in our lesson, we're going to cover those two chapters except for the last verse of chapter 18, because this is one of my least favorite chapter breaks in all of Scripture. The lament of David over the death of Absalom. You get one verse in chapter 18, and then it continues in chapter 19. And so I'm going to save David's lament for next week. But be ready for that last verse for practice this afternoon. But in chapter 17 and 18, we read about Absalom, David's son, attacking his father David. That's the kind of overarching theme. But just a little recap of how we got here. In our last lesson, we read about Absalom, who had been brought back to Jerusalem, allowed to come back to Jerusalem by David. He had spent 4 years, as I described it last week, politicking, meeting people, interjecting himself into disputes, and building allegiances with the people who would come in and out of the city of Jerusalem, which allowed him to gain power. And under the ruse of going to Hebron to sacrifice, he went outside the city, sent spies to all the tribes of Israel, and gathered a great force to come against Jerusalem. David, catching wind of this, leads all of his people out of Jerusalem. And as we left the account last week, Absalom and his army has moved into Jerusalem. Absalom has built his tent on top of his father's house, has taken his concubines at the advice of Ahithophel. We'll talk more about him today. And David and his people, those who are loyal to him, have left Jerusalem, and they are headed east toward the Jordan River. That's where we pick up today. And so what we're going to do is we're just going to work our way through the text of 17 and 18. And the first thing, now that we've got Absalom and his people in Jerusalem, David is outside of Jerusalem on the west side of the Jordan River. We'll look at a map in a minute. But his people are on the west side of the Jordan River. What you have is what I have labeled as the council regarding the attack. And if you've got a bulletin on the back side of the bulletin, you've got an outline of this morning's lesson with four fill-in-the-blanks. The first one of those is the word council. And the counsel here is counsel that is given to Absalom, again, now taking the place of his father in Jerusalem. And ultimately, counsel will be given to his father, David. And you pick up in verse 1, and the person who is brought back to mind immediately is Ahithophel. And so I want to kind of revisit who Ahithophel was. Ahithophel was a counselor to David, a trusted counselor to David, who was called by Absalom when Absalom was gathering his army, was called by Absalom to join his side, and so he leaves David's council and becomes a counselor to Absalom. And the first piece of advice that he gives after they come back to Jerusalem is Ahithophel says, you should go into your father's concubines. That's going to let everybody know that your father despises you. Because to take a king's concubines means that you are taking his power. You are taking his role. And he actually says to raise the stench among the people of David. And so Ahithophel gives that advice. And in chapter 16 closes by saying that the advice of Ahithophel was taken as that of an oracle of God. And so he was a trusted advisor to Absalom, as he had been a trusted advisor to David. And so here is Ahithophel's counsel to Absalom. Look in verse 1. It says, let me choose, this is Ahithophel speaking, let me choose 12,000 men. And presumably there are 12,000 men in the city of Jerusalem. Okay? Let me choose 12,000 men, and I want you to notice how many times he says me or I in what he says to Absalom. Let me choose 12,000 men. I will arise and pursue David. When? Tonight. Like, I'm not going to let any time pass. Let me lead these 12,000 men tonight. Why? I will come upon him while he is weary and weak. And we're going to later read that David was indeed, and his people were weary and weak. They needed to be refreshed. They needed to recover. They had made an urgent escape from Jerusalem. They needed time to recover. He says, I will come upon him while he is weary and weak, and make him afraid, and all the people who are with him will flee. This is his prediction. I will strike only the king. Then I will bring all the people to you. So he says, hey, I'm going to go essentially assassinate David. I'm going to take 12,000 men. I'm going to assassinate David, and then all of his people will join you. Okay? When all return except the man whom you seek, all the people will be at peace. And it says this about what Ahithophel had said to Absalom. The saying pleased Absalom and all the elders of Israel. They're like, okay, this is good. This is good advice. Okay, we'll revisit that in just a minute. When we pick up in verse 5, another individual is brought to the forefront, and this is Hushai. Now, Hushai is under the guise of being a counselor to Absalom, but is actually a spy for David. If you remember back in our previous lesson, as David, we kind of traced the escape of David from Jerusalem, and one of the places where he went was he went over the Mount of Olives. The Mount of Olives is on the east side of Jerusalem. He left the city, he crossed the Brook Kidron, he went over the Mount of Olives. And as he was going over the Mount of Olives, he encountered Hushai the Archite. And he recruited Hushai to say, go be my eyes and ears inside of Jerusalem. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. And he sends him to Jerusalem, and here's the instructions. You listen for what's going on, and then you go tell, and by the way, here's two others that we bring back to the forefront, Zadok and Abiathar. Okay? They are the two high priests that David had earlier sent back into Jerusalem as they were trying to leave with the Ark of the Covenant. He sent them back. And he had already told those two high priests, send message to me when it's okay to come back. You know, tell me what's going on. Okay? And he actually, I kind of breezed over this last week, but he actually said, use your two sons, Zadok and Abiathar, use your sons to send me the messages. Okay? We're going to come back to that in just a minute. So that's Hushai. Now Hushai, when we closed out of chapter 16, he is working to win the favor of Absalom, trying to convince him that he's not still loyal to David. And apparently, he did a really good job of it. Okay, follow with me. Apparently, he did a really good job of it. Because here's what he says. So Absalom goes to Hushai and says, hey, I've gotten this advice from Ahithophel. What do you think about it? Now, we've already been told that Absalom and all the elders of Israel thought that Ahithophel had given great advice, right? I mean, hey, this is a really good plan, okay? So he goes to Hushai and says, hey, this is what Ahithophel said. What do you think? And look at what he says. This is in verse 7. The advice that Ahithophel has given is not good at this time. For, said Hushai, you know your father and his men, and they are mighty men. By the way, David's men are described as mighty men many, many, many times. The mighty men of David, okay? And they are enraged in their minds. I love that description. Like they're just, I think about like Animal from the Muppets, you know, just crazy, you know? And so they're enraged in their minds, like a bear robbed of her cubs in the field. And your father is a man of war, which is true. He's truly a man of war. What do they say about David comparing to Saul? You know, Saul has killed his thousands. David has killed his 10,000s. He was truly a man of war, okay? And will not camp with the people. Surely by now he is hidden in some pit. David was a master at hiding. You think about when he was being chased by Saul in hiding in various places, in a lot of caves, even so well hidden in Gedi that when Saul came into the same cave, David stayed hidden and cut off the corner of Saul's robe without Saul knowing. He was a master at hiding. And he says, he's probably in some pit or some other place, and it will be when some of them are overthrown, meaning some of your people. You send out these 12,000 people being led by Ahithophel. When some of those 12,000 people are killed by David and his men, word is going to go throughout Israel. You know, This defeat at the hand of David is going to spread like wildfire throughout Israel. Okay? So, I'm going to skip a few verses. And here, in verse 11, is what Hushai advises. He says, "Therefore, I advise that all Israel be fully gathered to you. Don't just limit it to 12,000 men in Jerusalem. I think we should build an army." And he says next, "From Dan to Beersheba." From Dan to Beersheba is a phrase that is used many times in Scripture to define the northern and the southern boundaries of the nation of Israel. Okay? Again, we'll look at a map in just a minute. I have been to both Dan and Beersheba, and they are on extreme north and extreme southern ends of Canaan, of Palestine. And that's what he's saying. You should build an army from all of Israel, all the tribes. Okay, don't limit it to just 12,000 in Jerusalem. Build a grand army. And how will this army be described? Like sand that is by the sea for a multitude. Okay, and then you go to battle in person. Don't let Ahithophel lead the battle. You lead the battle yourself. Okay, so we will come upon him in some place where he may be found. And the language here is amazing. We will fall on him as dew falls on the ground. Now, I'm going to cut to the chase. What he's saying is, let's build an army so big that we're just going to go, you're going to lead them, and we're going to go, and we're going to wipe them off the face of the earth. We're going to annihilate them. This is not going to be, we're going to go in and kill David and bring the other people back. We're just going to wipe them off the face of the earth. Okay? And then you get to the end of this. Look at verse 14. "And Absalom and all the men of Israel," now what have they just said about Ahithophel? It's good advice. We like it. "And they said the advice of Hushai the Archite is better than the advice of Ahithophel." But Hushai, I believe that what he's doing is he knows that David and his men are weary. They have made an urgent escape over mountainous terrain. By the way, they were headed toward Jericho, which is east of Jerusalem. There is like a 3,000 or 4,000 foot elevation difference between Jerusalem and Jericho. I mean, this is mountainous terrain, okay? And so they've covered mountainous terrain. They are on the western side of the Jordan River. They have not crossed over. And so I think Hushai is like, if you go attack them now, they're going to be wiped out. And so what he's doing is he's coming up with this plan, this advice that will give David and his men time to recover. Okay? Because I think if you go back and look at it, the advice of Ahithophel, even though it's tinged with a little bit of selfishness, you know, I want to lead them, I want to gather them, I want to lead them, I want to bring them back, it's probably the better advice. It's probably the better advice because David is not in a position to withstand an attack. But why do Absalom and the elders say that Hushai's plan is better? Why do they say his plan is better? It says in verse 14, the latter part of verse 14, "For the Lord had purposed to defeat the good advice of Ahithophel, to the intent that the Lord might bring disaster on Absalom." It says that Ahithophel's advice was good, but the Lord was working through the decisions of men to overcome the good advice to Ahithophel. Now, I want you to remember, I think there's a lesson here. And we actually talked about this through some conversation in our class, in adult class this morning, studying Ezra chapter 3, about God answering prayers. Do you remember in the previous lesson when David gets word that Ahithophel has deserted him and has gone, has sided himself with Absalom? Do you remember what David prayed for? David prayed that Ahithophel's advice to Absalom would be, one word, foolishness. Right? Foolishness. That's what David prayed for. Okay? Now, did God answer that prayer? Yes. Did he answer it the way that David had prayed it? No. Because Ahithophel's advice was good advice. But what did Absalom do? He ignored it. He ignored it. So God, I believe God answers all prayers. Sometimes we put those in the categories of, well, it can be yes, it can be no, or it can be wait, you know. But sometimes even the yeses look different than what we have in our minds, right? The yeses sometimes look different than what we have in our minds because God works in His own way at His own time. That was the emphasis, you know, this morning think, Jeff, your comments was that, you know, God is on his own timetable, right? And so God is working to answer that prayer, but in a different way than what David had prayed. I think that's a great lesson for us to learn. God, who we're praying to, is infinite and almighty. He sees everything in every direction and understands situations and timelines much better than we ever can. And that is the greatest understatement in the history of the world. Okay? And so he's answering the prayer in a different way. Ahithophel's advice is not foolishness. It's ignored. It's ignored, okay? Ultimately to the detriment of Ahithophel and Absalom, okay? Now, the council doesn't stop there. Because what was the mandate given to Hushai? I want you to find out what's going on. I want you to go tell Zadok and Abiathar what's going on, okay? Now remember, Zadok and Abiathar had already been told, what's going on? I want you to tell your sons to send a message to me, okay? So now we got this complete chain of how messages are going to make their way back to David, okay? So here's the second half of the council, because the first half was the council to Absalom. Now it's the council to David. Now Hushai knows two things, okay? He knows that he's given advice to Absalom, but he also has been told exactly what Ahithophel's advice was, which was attack now, okay? And I believe that Hushai, even though maybe he believes that Absalom is going to follow his advice, he's hedging his bet that maybe Absalom falls back and follows Ahithophel's advice. Because Hushai's message to David through Zadok and Abiathar, and if you look in your text, go down to verse 16, Hushai said to Zadok and Abiathar, and then you go down to verse 17, now Jonathan and Ahimaaz, I hope I'm saying that right, I'm confident I'm not, but those are the sons of Zadok and Abiathar, okay? The message that Hushai is sending through Zadok and Abiathar and Jonathan and Ahimaaz is, get across the Jordan immediately. Get across the Jordan. Now what does that mean? They're on the western side of the Jordan. What he means is cross over the Jordan to the eastern side of the Jordan. Again, we'll look at a map in just a minute. But I want you to get across there. Okay? You need to create some distance between you and Absalom. Okay? That's the advice. Now, the way that message gets to David, I just did not have room to kind of summarize all of this in the bulletin. But what has been going on with the sons of Zadok and Abiathar, Jonathan and Ahimaaz, is that they have been hiding outside of Jerusalem in a place called En-Rogel. If you look down in verse 16, you'll see that they have been staying in a place called En-Rogel, which is close to Jerusalem. And there has been a girl who has been going back and forth between their fathers and the sons, delivering messages that they can then send to David. Okay? Because they don't want to be seen going in and out of the city of Jerusalem and raising questions. But one of Absalom's servants sees that this girl is going out to them. And so they go to a place that David had previously been, Bahurim, okay? And they hide in a well, okay? They hide in a well. And the owner of the house where the well is, his wife, comes out and covers the well and spreads her grain out on top of the covering, like to dry it out. You know, like you harvest the grain, you spread it out to dry it out. And when the soldiers of Absalom come to the town, Bahurim, they go to the house, they ask, and they say, no, they've already gone on beyond the river. Okay? They've already gone on beyond the spring. Okay? So they're not caught, but they have the message that needs to get to David. Okay, and so they get to David, and they tell David, if you go down to verse 20, it says, you know, when they came and searched, they could not find them. They returned to Jerusalem. Go to verse 21. It came to pass, after they had departed, this is the two sons, they came up out of the well and went and told King David. And said to David, by the way, I want you to notice how many times in these two chapters, that David is referred to as king. You know, who has kind of usurped the throne at this point? It's Absalom. But who is still constantly called the king. It's David. David is the one that God selected. Absalom is not the one that God selected. But he said to David, "Arise and cross over the water quickly, for thus has Ahithophel advised against you." This again, hedging his bet. If Absalom decides he's going to follow Ahithophel's advice, you got to create some space, okay? You got to create some distance. And so he says, "Go, get over there." And it says, by morning light, not one of David's men was still on the, I'm paraphrasing, was still on the eastern side, sorry, the western side of the Jordan River. Okay? So under the cover of night, the David and his those who were loyal to him cross over the Jordan River. And then you come down to verse 23. While all this is happening, Ahithophel realizes that his advice is not going to be followed. And what does he do? He hangs himself. And you might go, well, why? Why did he do that? And you know, Scripture only says that it was because he realized that his advice would not be followed. I'm going to tell you my opinion of why he did it. Okay? I think he realizes that his advice was the better advice. Go hit him while they're tired. You know, attack him while they're weary. That just popped in my head. I've been watching. I am a fanatic about the Olympics. I just love it. I love it. Okay. But when do you attack a mighty enemy? When they're tired. When they're down. When they're weary. One of the premier events that has been hyped for the 2 weeks of it is the men's 200 meter sprint, which the prohibitive favorite was an American named Noah Lyles. Okay. If you're planning to go back and watch it later, I'm sorry, I'm about to spoil it for you. Noah Lyles won the bronze, not the gold. Why? He had COVID, and he's an asthmatic with COVID. And he didn't win. Why? Because he was weak and weary from being sick, right? When do you attack the one who is the strongest? When they're weak and when they're weary, right? And so Ahithophel knows, I gave the best advice, and if he follows Hushai's advice, it's not going to end well. And then what's going to happen? David's going to come back to Jerusalem. And who have I betrayed? I betrayed David. There's no way David is going to reconcile to me. He's probably going to end my life. Again, that's my opinion. It's my opinion of why that news that his advice was not followed led him to commit suicide. That's my opinion. Okay. So then, and I'm going to try to speed up here. The next thing we read about, beginning in verse 24 of chapter 17, and I've labeled this the camps in the attack. And this is, again, description of the army of David and the army of Absalom. Okay? Because Absalom, on the advice of Hushai, is going to lead his army from all of Israel out toward David. And David crosses, as we've already read, he crossed the Jordan River. Now we got our map, okay? Now we got our map, which is hard to read. I'm less concerned about the labels and more the geography. But we've got here the Dead Sea. Right there is the Sea of Galilee. Just above that is Dan. So this is roughly the footprint of the nation of Israel. But all of this red line is the area that was under the control of David, which again is the breadth of the territory that had been promised to Abraham. But right here is the Jordan River. Here is Jerusalem. So David has moved over into the eastern side of the Jordan River. And we're going to read about how he went to a place called Mahanaim, which again, I know you can't read that because I can't read it, but I know where it is. There's Mahanaim right there. Okay? Mahanaim, which had been the place where Ishbosheth, remember Ishbosheth? Son of Saul, who had, for a very short amount of time, had been the king over the northern tribes. That's where Ishbosheth reigned from, okay? Mahanaim. And so Mahanaim is in an area called Gilead. You ever heard of Gilead before? He was in an area known as Mahanaim, was in Gilead. And David takes his army to Mahanaim. And by the way, when they get to Mahanaim, what do you read? The people of Mahanaim not only accepted David and his people, but they gave them food and water and beds. Because what did they need? They needed rest. They needed nourishment. Why? Because as Ahithophel had said, they're weak and they're weary. And so you read, you know, coming through the end of chapter 17, the people of Mahanaim work to help David and his army become refreshed. And so Hushai's plan is taking root because David has time to recover. And in the meantime, Absalom starts leading his army from Jerusalem toward Gilead, okay, which is where David is. Now, when we pick up in chapter 18, it says this: David numbered the people who were with him and set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. Then David set out one-third of the people under the hand of Joab. Okay, Joab, who was the commander of his army, was also related to David. Okay, one-third under the hand of Abishai. Who's Abishai? He's the brother of Joab. He's popped up a few times. The son of Zeruiah, their mother, Joab and Abishai's mother. Then it says, it identifies him as Joab's brother. And one-third under the hand of Ittai the Gittite. Now, Ittai was a Philistine from Gath who had brought 600 men into the city of Jerusalem and who came with David when he escaped. Now, Ittai has risen to such prominence that he is a commander of a third of David's army. So you have these three commanders. And by the way, I mentioned that Absalom was leading his people into Gilead. Absalom has appointed a commander of his army. We have to go back to chapter 17. Go to verse 25. It says, Absalom made Amasa captain of the army instead of Joab. Because why? Joab had left to go with David. Now, it's complicated, but when it describes the lineage of Amasa, but here's the short of it. Amasa was related to both David and Joab, okay, a relative of both. But Amasa is now the captain of Absalom's army, and David's army has been divided into thirds with Joab, Abishai, and Ittai as the three commanders, okay, as the three commanders. But David, before he sends them out to battle the army of Absalom, he gives them one very specific instruction. Okay? One very specific instruction. Go down to If you go down to verse 3, sorry, I'll get to their one specific instruction. David, even though he has the three commanders, insists he's going to go with them. He's going to go lead the armies. But what do the people say? No. You stay in the city, Mahanaim. Why? Okay, their words are, you are worth 10,000 of us now, for you are now more help to us in the city. What is this all about? This is all about a power play of Absalom trying to take the throne from David. So who is the most important person in the army of David? It's David. If David is killed, all of this is for nothing, right? So they say, you stay in Mahanaim, we'll go fight this battle. And so David, as he's watching them leave, if you go down to verse 5, it says, the king had commanded Joab, Abishai, and Ittai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. What does that mean? It means go win victory, but do not kill my son. Don't kill my son, okay? Don't kill my son. And so that brings us to the next section, chapter 18, verses 6 through 18, which I have labeled the conquest over Absalom. Now, the actual description of this battle is very short, okay? It's very short. It's only verses 6 through 8. And it says, when the people went out of the end of the field of battle against Israel, and the battle was in the woods of Ephraim. By the way, that label, the woods of Ephraim, is puzzling, because it is clear from the description that they are fighting, and I'll go back to this map, they are fighting on the eastern side of the Jordan River, but Ephraim was in the northern part of Palestine, just below Galilee. And so why they call the woods of Ephraim on the east side of the Jordan River the woods of Ephraim is unclear. One suggestion is that maybe there had been so many refugees from the tribe of Ephraim that had settled in the land of Gilead that it had become known as the woods of Ephraim. But again, we don't know for certain why it was called that. But whatever the reason why it's labeled that, this battle is taking place in dense forest. Okay? In dense forest. And it says that while they're fighting in dense forest, the people of Israel were overthrown. This is verse 7. Were overthrown there before the servants of David, and a great slaughter of 20,000 took place there that day. For the battle there was scattered over the face of the whole countryside, and the woods devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. So the people of Absalom did not know how to fight in the woods like the servants of David did. And so they defeated him. And then we move from that, this overwhelming victory, to the last part of this section, again through verse 18, is a description about what happens to Absalom. Now, if you remember from a couple of lessons ago, we had a description of Absalom being one of the most handsome men in all of Israel, and also what was described about him. His hair, right? He had such long hair, lustrous hair. He had it cut once a year, and they weighed it, and it weighed so many shekels, I forget how many. But it was a very big emphasis on his hair. Well, now we read about Absalom, and he's riding through this forest on a donkey, and what happens to him? Okay, Absalom rode on a mule. The mule went under, this is verse 9, under the thick boughs, those are tree limbs, of a great terebinth tree, and his head caught in the terebinth. Now, it doesn't explicitly say this, but I'm imagining he's getting caught by his hair. Okay, again, it doesn't say that. Maybe he was caught by his neck. But because of the emphasis on the hair earlier and how long his hair was, it makes sense to me. But his head's caught in the hair, and one of a servant of David from the army finds him and comes to Joab and says, this is in verse 10, I just saw Absalom hanging in a terebinth tree. And what does Joab say? What does Joab say? Hey, David said don't lay a hand on him, so don't touch him. No. Joab said, why didn't you kill him? If he'd killed him, I would have given you 10 shekels of silver and a belt. And the young man goes, I wouldn't have accepted 100 shekels because David, didn't David tell you not to lay a hand on Absalom? And I can just imagine Joab going, pff, pff, whatever. And Joab walks over and does what? Now this is, I mean, the Bible just lays it out there, right? Stabbed him through the heart with 3 spears, as if 1 spear wasn't enough. And then as if 3 spears wasn't enough, he takes his 10 young armor bearers and they come in and help him, right? So it is clear that Absalom dies, okay? Directly in contradiction to the command of David. And they bury Absalom in a pit in the woods. And that leads us into... Oh, by the way, there's this really kind of strange little side note in verse 18. I know we're over time, but I feel like I need to at least mention this. But after Absalom has died, after he's been buried, it just says that Absalom, this is verse 18, in his lifetime had taken up and set up a pillar for himself, which is in the King's Valley, by the way. That's probably the same place where Abraham, after the battle of Kedorlaomer, where he had rescued his son Lot, where he encountered the king of Sodom after his victory. It was referred to as the King's Valley. But he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. What's interesting about this is that Absalom, we read this earlier, had 3 sons. So I take this to be that either he put up this pillar before he had the sons, or, probably more likely, that none of his sons had survived. And so he had put up this pillar to his name in the King's Valley, and it says it's still standing to this day and referred to as Absalom's monument. Now, that was the conquest over Absalom. The last thing we're going to talk about is the communication regarding the death of Absalom. And this is the communication to David, okay? The communication to David, who had said explicitly, go easy on Absalom. Don't kill him, okay? And so the first person that comes to Joab and says, let me go tell the king, is Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, says, let me now, this is in verse 19, let me now run to take news to the king, how the Lord has avenged him of his enemies. And then Joab, in a couple of different ways, says, no, you're not going to do it. And I think the reason was he knew, or he presumed what would happen to the messenger who took the news to David. I mean, David killed the messenger who said that he had killed Saul, right? And so he's like, no, you're not going to go. You're not going to go be the one to tell him. And then it's recorded in verse 20 that He said, because the king's son is dead. Now, from what I understand from the original language, that may or may not be part of Joab's quote. That may be what the narrator said in explaining why he wouldn't send Ahimaaz to David. Okay? But then we're introduced to this Cushite. And some have supposed that the Cushite, that was Ethiopia. This was an Ethiopian. We don't know for certain. But regardless, this was a foreigner. This is not an Israelite. This is not a Jew. Okay? This is a foreigner. So he says, no, come here. You come here. You run and tell David what happened. And then Ahimaaz says, let me run after him. He says, why? You don't have any news to tell. And he says, not only did he run after him, he did what? Speak like the Olympics. He outran him. Okay? He outran him. And then it's kind of like a meanwhile back at the ranch kind of thing. We go back to David. And David is in the city of Mahanaim. He's standing between the gates. And there's a watchman up on the wall. And what does the watchman see? The watchman sees first one man and then another man running behind him. And I love this because it says, from watching the way the first man ran, he recognized who it was. And I love that because as a runner, those of you that don't know me, I'm a runner, I'm a distance runner. I can recognize people that I run with a lot by the way they run before they're close enough for me to recognize their face. I can recognize them by their stride. So this makes a lot of sense to me. I was actually running around the Lipscomb campus the other day, and I was running near the track. I was still probably, I don't know, maybe a quarter of a mile from the track, coming downhill so I could see it really well. And I looked and I said, oh, that must be Claire running. Now, I wasn't close enough to see her face, but I could just tell by the way she ran who it was. And when I got closer, I was like, yep, that's Claire. She's running. And so this makes sense to me that he would recognize him by the way he runs. And so they have this dialogue between the messenger and David. And ultimately it gets down that Ahimaaz gets there first. And it says he outran the Cushite. Now go down to verse 28. This is what he says. He says, all is well. This is Ahimaaz. He bowed down with his face to the earth before the king and said, blessed be the Lord your God who has delivered up the men who raised their hand against my lord the king. So we say, overwhelming victory, right? Then what does David ask? Is the young man Absalom safe? And Ahimaaz says this, when Joab sent the king's servant and me to your servant, I saw a great tumult, but I did not know what it was about. And some have said, well, Ahimaaz was clearly flat out lying and he didn't know what happened to Absalom. Because if you read earlier, Joab had said, because the king's son is dead. And again, that's why I emphasize that maybe not. Maybe that was part of what Joab said. Maybe that was a comment by the narrator who wrote this as to what happened. Whatever the case, he says, I don't know. I don't know what happened to Absalom. Well, then who shows up? The Cushite. The Cushite. And the Cushite, which you heard the reading from Brother Dwight this morning, he read these two verses. The Cushite said, essentially the same thing as Ahimaaz, there's good news, my lord, the king, for the Lord has avenged you this day and all those who rose against you. And the king said to the Cushite, is the young man Absalom safe? Exact same question. And the Cushite, a foreigner, probably has no knowledge of the command given to David, given by David to his commanders. And I can imagine him saying this with glee. You know, like the messenger who came and told David about Saul, right? May the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise against you to do harm be like that young man. What is that saying to David? He's dead. May all your enemies be vanquished like this enemy was vanquished. He tells David that his son has died. And you know, I don't know how similar this situation is to his relationship with Saul. Saul, who had clearly tried to kill him every step of the way for a number of years, and David continued to defer to the will of God in sparing the life of Saul. But here is a different relationship. It's a father-to-son relationship. And Absalom has been working for years to overthrow his father. He said, well, why would David not be happy that his enemy was vanquished? Anyone who had a child can understand this, right? You can understand this. That no matter what, you're going to love your child. And the reason why I'm not going to jump into the very last verse of chapter 18 is because what we have following is David's lament over the loss of Absalom. And so I kind of wanted to cover all that together. But David is, to say he is distraught is underplaying. He is beyond distraught at the loss of his son, Absalom. And so, you know, takeaways here, we're continuing to see the fallout from his sin. Nathan prophesying that the sword would not leave his family, completely true. It continues to be true. But God, it's clearly that it's God's will. Remember how David in our last lesson over and over said, if it's God's will, he'll bring me back, but if it's not, I'll take my fate. Well, it's clearly it's God's will that David be back in power, that he be the king. And so God has been working through the decisions of man to bring him back to power as David is going through the consequences. Even in the midst of that, answering prayers of David in ways that are different than the way David prayed. Which I think is a lesson that all of us can learn. It was said this morning in class that God is going to work out His will always in His time. He's going to work out His will in His time and His way. And part of giving our life over to God is being willing to defer to His will. And His will for us in this time now is for all of us to follow His Son, which is not an easy thing to do because it requires giving up what is human nature for us to follow ourselves. And so if you're here this morning and you've never made that decision that I'm going to give up my own will to follow the will of another, to give my life to Jesus, we encourage you to make those first steps this morning. If there's anything we can do for you, please come while we sing our invitation song.